Evening. Well, we're back again with another Liberty Land podcast. And today's been an unusual day. It's the, what day is today? I believe it's the 19th of January. I do know that this is Liberty Land number 8 because I went and looked at the files and I have a number 7 in the can. I have yet to locate Liberty Land number 3, although I'm certain I did one. Anyway, today is in fact the 19th of January, 2009. And this is, in fact, episode number 8 of the Liberty Land series. Liberty Land series. I have to speak slowly enough so that I enunciate the words that I'm using. And so what I thought I would do today is basically read some of the stuff that we have up at the Bludgeon and Skewer website concerning Liberty Land. You know, what is the idea of Liberty Land? I mean, in essence, it is an indoor range and a gun shop, located in a major metropolitan area in the city of Atlanta, in Georgia, a gun-friendly state by anybody's definition. And discusses some background information on that, but Liberty Land is a gun shop and a range, a place to acquire firearms and a place to shoot them. Ideally, at Liberty Land would be the pioneer in a concept of try before you buy firearms, you know, to see if this particular gun is going to work out for you. And, you know, you got to pay a price to give it a shot. Well, if you don't buy it, you don't buy it. But you still got to pay to shoot it, you know. And part of the process should be that the price of the weapon is reduced by whatever amount is spent in rental. So if it's $10 to shoot a brand new gun, you know, I mean, you can rent a handgun at Bullseye for $5, but it's been shot to shit, it's filthy, it's falling apart. There's concerns. I mean, aside from the Glocks that run forever, it's bad when you pick up a nasty-looking gun. Gun should be clean when you shoot it. That's one thing that Liberty Land should strive to do, is never put a dirty gun back in a rental case. All right? Also, you know, from a gun-buying point of view, I spent a hell of a lot of time buying guns, as well as a hell of a lot of time selling guns over the last 14 years. The idea that you could go down and, you know, pick out an $1,100 Sig Sauer, you know, one of their really nice upgrade guns, and bang 50 rounds through it. I mean, well, what's that worth? You know, I mean, how much, if you fire 50 bullets through a gun, how much does that devalue the weapon? Or does it devalue the weapon? I mean, most manufacturers have a suggested break-in period, and the number you see bandied about the most is 200 to 300 rounds, four to six boxes of shells, you know, before you should consider the weapon broken in. You know, now if it's still hitting a little left or a little low, now it's time to fuck around with some sights. But, you know, I mean, how much does that depreciate that $1,000 weapon? Does that turn it into a $900 weapon if you run 300 rounds of shells through it? You know, what if it has one or two documented prior owners? You know, see, that's kind of the key on a used gun. You know, if the guy bought it from you brand new and had it for a period of time and brought it back and traded it against something else, that gun should have a higher valuation than a gun that came out of nowhere. You know, because you know that you got it from the wholesaler, and the wholesaler got it direct from the manufacturer, and you sold it to the primary customer who traded it back to you, and you sold it to the secondary customer. You know for a fact the gun does not have a checkered past. Something else at Liberty Land we'd like to try to get instituted is the ability to check serial numbers on weapons discreetly. You know, some guns that are stolen, and people know they're stolen. Other guns that are stolen aren't necessarily stolen with the knowledge of the current owner. The theft might have occurred so far back in the custody chain that the guy that's five or six down couldn't possibly know about it. I'm doing a podcast solo. I'm sorry, but I got to get this one in the can. I'm at 4:14. 8 more minutes. No, that's fine. I don't need that.
No, I mean, stairs.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. Put it on the bench, but don't put it near me. All right, back to the podcast. Liberty Land, we were talking about chain of custody and used guns. And I think having a documented chain of custody probably should add value to the weapon. I mean, from a practical point of view, if you buy a brand new gun, it has been fired two, possibly three times. Guarantee it. Federal law mandates it. They have to be fired. The shells have to be recovered and included with the weapon, so that in some states of our great country, thankfully not in the state of Georgia, but in some states of our great country, you have to take your newly acquired weapon and your two spent shell casings down to the police department you know, allow them to fondle your new acquisition and dutifully record the serial number of the weapon and file away the shell casings to be compared, entered into a database, I would imagine. Of course, it had to be put in the NICS database, the FBI forensics database, so that if a similar shell ever showed up at a crime scene, they would know, hey, this came from a 9mm that was sold to John Smith in 1994. All right, now, how that aids the current investigation, I'm a little fuzzy on. You know, I mean, I can see it in some cases, in some cases I cannot. I do know that given the sheer numbers of guns that are sold in this country every year, that the database, and the law has been in existence for many years now, the database is probably huge to the point of being insurmountable. I mean, not manageable. And one would have to question the validity of any digital media that is 10 years old, that purportedly records at a scientific level, or, you know, at least a sufficient level for use in a court of law, the physical characteristics of a fired shell. You know, that now if they've got the actual bullet, think about that. I mean, my God, they've got a catalog now. These very sundry counties and states have catalogs of millions of bullets, you know, and they have little 3x5 cards that say the date, the owner, the serial number of the gun, you know, ad infinitum. And this all has to be stored, warehoused, archived, indexed, you know. You can't just throw it in a freaking warehouse in a Gaylord box. I mean, the crap's got to be accessible, you know, so that if your digital record indicates a match, you can go and retrieve the actual round, you know, and use that as a comparative. Numbers of flaws with the system, of course, because, you know, guns are metallic items. They're made of metal. You know, metal, over its lifetime, will wear and abrade. And the breech face of a pistol or a breech face of a rifle or a shotgun is an area that receives a lot of stress in the functioning of the firearm. You know, when the shell ignites, that initial slam of energy slams right into the breech face. You know, and it's not like, you know, I mean, I swear to God, now, if you take, oh, let's say you take a one-inch steel pin, you know, with a one-inch diameter, a big heavy one, and you hit it as hard as you can with a three-pound hammer 600 times, is the face of that pin going to be the same as it was for strike number one on strike number 600? No, of course not. Of course not. So the data that they're collecting is of dubious value. You know, I don't believe you'd have any difficulty in mounting an effective defense if the prosecution was going to focus its case on the idea that this bullet matches the bullet we had in the archive. You know, you tried another forensics guy and you say, how many bullets got fired through the gun? Can you tell us? You know, how do you know? You know, have you done any testing? Yada, yada, blah, blah. You know. Well, so chain of custody in terms of used guns, I believe, to have value. All right, now we're going to examine one of the pages up at the website, Bludgeon and Skewer, about the project, the Liberty Land Indoor Range and Gun Shop Project. And this is direct from the website. The biggest single problem facing the Libertarian Party of Georgia is devising a method of consistently collecting donations to support the party's ongoing political objectives. The current focus is finding and funding viable candidates for statewide public office here in the great state of Georgia to enhance the party's political footprint, and to begin to bring about change on the libertarian model. Now, how do we get that done? What sort of income stream do we need? And how do we motivate libertarians and libertarian-minded citizens to join up? That is the question. Well, I propose a non-standard solution to this problem, a libertarian solution. It's been my experience here in Georgia that most of the libertarians I've met have all been firearms enthusiasts and are fully Second Amendment compliant. They suffer from the same malady that most shooters in Atlanta have to contend with, a total lack of indoor shooting facilities inside the perimeter. Now, I think the LP, Georgia LP, should look into installing a members-only indoor range and gun shop facility right here in DeKalb County for the exclusive use of the libertarian community. The exclusive use of the libertarian community. This range would provide daily cash flow for the party and serve as an excellent recruiting tool for expanding the LP's base in Georgia. The Liberty Land Indoor Range would be a members-only facility. You have to be a member of the LP or in the company of one to use the range or purchase any items for sale in a shop. Such a facility would be a first in the world of politics and would serve as a metro focus point for individuals who view politics through the lens of the Second Amendment. Now, there's an attachment that is a detailed analysis of the current indoor range situation in metropolitan Atlanta. The most interesting fact is that there are an estimated 300,000 CCW holders in Metro. Now, these people are libertarians who just do not know it. The Liberty Land Range document projects a little over 19,000 users of the range per year. Now, if the party can induce 50% of them to join the party for range access, and that's $25, kids, that works out to 100,000 new members. That's $250,000 in membership fees for the party. That is fuel for the 2010 cycle. I truly believe that this concept would work to the benefit of the Libertarian Party and the members of the party. Take the time to review the documents at the website if you can. Any feedback's important, because I really believe this should be LB George's top priority. Combine fundraising with membership drives by the ability to use a specific facility for a specific function in an attempt to appeal to a specific slice of the electorate. You know, libertarians have to learn how to live with being 10% activity. You know, I'm not sure that we'll ever be a dominant force in American politics, but I do believe we can be an influence. You know, I think the things that the LP stands for should be heard and should be considered. And establishing, running this project as a political project, it's groundbreaking in so many ways. I mean, people talk about the Republican brand and Democrat brand. And it was crucial, the amount of fundraising that went on in the last cycle, the 2008 presidential cycle. I mean, Rock and Barry O picked up $750 million, $800 million, maybe broke a trillion. Got a little fuzzy toward the end there. You know, that's a ton of money. You know, and it was all raised, not all raised, but a goodly portion of it, an impressive portion of it, was raised on the Internet. You know, we can look at the experiences of Ron Paul, you know, who's more on our side of the spectrum. I mean, I'm not a Ron Paul Republican. I am, in fact, a libertarian. But, you know, Ron Paul's boys put together a $5 million day. I mean, they made that happen. And you know, just from looking at the numbers of votes the man got, that you're not talking about, you're talking, I don't know, 500,000 people threw into that pot? 50,000? Could 50,000 raise $5 million in one day? Coordinated action. Well, if you took 50,000 and everybody tossed in 100, yeah, that's $5 million bucks, boys. 50 grand, 50,000 followers make $5 million. And if you had $5 million to use in a insurgent-style, libertarian-style, urban commando-style political campaign, you know, against the entrenched powers that be, you know, shit, $5 million be enough to swing the election for a senator in Georgia? That was about the budget amount that fucking Saxby started out with in 2008. He had more than that, actually. And Martin took him a long time to get there, but he did finally make it. He made that $5 million number. You know, if Allen had had $5 million 2 months out, I don't know. It could have been a massacre, a total massacre. Bludgeon and Skewer would like to find out. Anyway, Liberty Land. We've covered some basics about Liberty Land. We've talked some bits about politics, and we're running up on 1324, which is theoretically the time I'm turning these things off. This has been Liberty Land, the indoor, the gun shop, was it? Indoor range and gun shop of the gun shop of the future, Liberty Land, the gun shop of the future, on 19 January 2009. Good night, and thanks for your attention.